This episode of Gators Breakdown is brought to you by Manscaped. Get 20% off plus free shipping and two free gifts when you purchase the new Perfect Package 3.0 kit with promo code Gators. Head over to manscaped.com and purchase yours today.
Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And joining me on this episode is co-host Will Miles, and you can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site, readandreaction.com. Will, man, how you holding up?
I'm ready for bed, man. It's usually we're doing this stuff late at night and I'm ready for bed, but run a little bit of night shift to get the social distancing that we need at work. And so it was a little bit of a rough night. First night I've been doing it, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. I worked till about 9:30 last night. You were a complete night shift. You were in the AM hours of working for your job, but I was out, for social distancing. I was playing teacher in the morning time and then hit Channel 4 studios about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then to get out of the building so I'm not around anybody, went and filmed some time lapses and actually ran into I believe his name was Kevin. I was kind of busy at the time. I ran into a Gators break. He saw my hat and said he's listening to the podcast. So that was cool to see. And a cool event that happened there, just in the middle of San Marco in Jacksonville, shooting some time lapse video. But trying to do all the social distancing I can.
Yeah, well, it seems like if you're doing videography for a news organization, it'd be difficult to get as much distance as you might, as the CDC is calling for. At least there weren't a whole lot of people in my lab this morning, so it was a safer place to be, I'm betting. But anyway, we'll get through it. Obviously, it's not ideal, but got to give people some content.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, speaking of content, this episode we have a conversation with Nick Elsnest, the new tight end commit for the Gators from Episcopal School in Jacksonville. I sat down with him earlier this week, and we got to ask him about his recruitment process and the coaching staff and all that good stuff there. So that conversation's coming up. Also, Will and I will dive into where recruiting stands at the moment as we head into April and this kind of, unprecedented time that we're dealing with in the recruiting world and the college football world. And we'll quickly hit on Will's latest article where he lays out why Florida may not miss last year's group of senior wide receivers as much as we think. Remember, you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes there, as well as News4Jax coverage of the Gators and all of Jacksonville sports. And if you missed earlier this spring, if you want to go back for some more content, there we had, of course, offense and defensive question and answer preview, and of course the most recent edition of the Gator panel, all at news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown and your favorite podcast platform. Without further ado, here's our conversation with Gators tight end commit Nick Elsnest. Nick, thanks for joining Gators Breakdown.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, let's get started. Of course, previously committed to Penn State, what made you decommit from the Nittany Lions and commit to Florida? How long did you know you wanted to be a Gator?
I've been doing this whole recruiting process for a long time. Been about a year and a half, 2 years, like getting heavily recruited now. And when I committed to Penn State, I really like their tight end coach. I still do. He's a great guy. He's a great person. You know, he's somebody that I definitely want to be coached under. He's got a lot of motivation. You know, he wants to be the best at his job. And so I kind of attached to that quickly. You know, I had a good connection with him. He grew up in South Georgia. You know, we've got my dad and I go hunting in South Georgia. So we had that connection. And so I was kind of done with the whole recruiting process, and I thought that was a good choice for me. And then about 6 months later, after all the shine of, you know, football season, going up to Happy Valley for the Whiteout game and everything, after that all faded away a little bit, I got to thinking, got to looking at it, and I mean, in his profession, coaches come and go by the week. You know, they're not there for very long. And I was making my decision based off of a single coach. It wasn't even the head coach. And I started looking at my options again, not in serious detail, but just, you know, looking at what there was. And, you know, Florida obviously was a huge one for me because it's right down the road. I think it's like an hour and 20 minutes from my front door to the stadium. And I mean, I love Dan Mullen. He's a great dude, the new tight end coach that they have now, Coach Brewster. He's phenomenal. I mean, if you look at his history, I mean, he knows what he's doing for sure with the tight ends. And then, I mean, as a school, academically, it's a great fit for me. You know, they're the only school in the country that can say they're top 10 football and top 10 academics. I mean, that was huge. And then when I saw that, I mean, it was obvious for me that I need to redecide and head over to Florida.
You mentioned the new tight end coach, Tim Brewster. Of course, tight end coach before Larry Scott left to take a head coaching job. What was your connection before Brewster came about and then since Brewster's been on campus at Florida?
Well, I'll be honest, who I've been recruited by most was Coach Scott, Larry Scott, the old tight end coach. And he really got the ball rolling. I met him at a junior day about 2 years ago, I think. And I mean, we didn't really keep heavy contact. We got more and more involved in each other's lives, I guess. And then when it got to that September 1 date of this year, you know, he was just texting me. He was like, I know you're already committed, but he's like, one of the main things that you got to understand is you shouldn't feel sorry for the decision you make. He's like, if this is what you believe you need to do, you know, decommit or commit or any of this stuff. Like, you got to remember that the coaches are doing the exact same thing. You know, they're still looking at other players. They aren't, you know, they don't feel sorry about it. So you shouldn't either. You know, this is your life and you got to remember that. So, I mean, he was just really nice because he gave me a lot of good insight. And I think when I got down there for the junior day this year, when I was driving back from Gainesville is when I found out that he took the head coaching job. So, I mean, he wasn't even recruiting me that hard. He was just being a normal guy, a good person. And just, I got to see really the kind of people that Florida wanted to bring onto their staff.
That's good to hear. Good to hear. So you mentioned the junior day a couple of times and the last junior day Florida had, and that's when that weekend is the weekend you committed. Go back and take us to that weekend. And I know you had your family with you all the way up to your grandparents up there in the swamp. How was that trip? And did you kind of already know going into that trip that's when you wanted to commit, or was there anything that happened that trip that kind of sealed the deal?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't know I was going to commit. I thought it would be really cool if I did because my grandmother was going to be there. My great grandparents, her father and mother, they were season ticket holders their whole lives. And my grandmother was a season ticket holder her whole life. So, I mean, that would have been really cool. If my grandmother were to have a tattoo, it would definitely be a gator. it would be the Bull Gator. There's no doubt about it. But, it would have been really cool, but I honestly had no idea. And I got down there and there was nothing really special about the junior day. I got to sit down and talk with Coach Brewster one-on-one a lot. And I just really got to get a good feel for the kind of guy that he was and the kind of person that he is, not just as a football coach, but, you know, off the field, you know, how he's going to help raise me as a young man, because when I leave, when I leave my house, you know, he's going to pretty much be my parent. And, you know, hearing that he's, you know, a man of faith and everything, and that he just wants to raise me to be not just a good football player, but a good man. That really spoke volumes to me. And that's when I knew that Florida was definitely where I should be going.
All right, my co-host Will wasn't able to join us for this interview, but he did send a few questions my way, and you kind of hit on this earlier, the whole recruiting process. He wants to know, you know, is there anything you wish fans knew about the recruiting process?
Come again?
Was there anything you wish fans knew about the recruiting process?
Well, there's a couple things that I think it would be really it'd be beneficial for fans to know, because, you know, for me, I didn't really get it. I was surprised I didn't. But, you know, I'm decently good friends with Mac Jones. And, you know, when Mac decommitted from Kentucky, fans were spewing all this hate and everything at him on social media, you know, saying all this junk about, you know, how he's a bad person, everything, for decommitting from Kentucky. But a lot of the times fans don't understand what's going on inside the actual staff room and everything. And they don't understand that sometimes it's in your best interest. And I would, in my opinion, I think it would be nice if it was even possible for, like, on commitment posts and decommitment posts, that they could block off fans from commenting, just because I think it adds a lot more pressure into the athlete's mind than he already has. I mean, you're making your next decision on pretty much your life. I mean, where you're going to go to college, that probably is going to be the state where you end up, you know, in all likelihood you're going to end up being around that area. So, I mean, it's a huge commitment. And so just having that push from fans and everything, that makes it more difficult. But I do enjoy it, because the fans also, they give you a lot of confidence and pride in your decision if they're for your team. You know, they're definitely hyping you up and everything. So kind of a double-edged sword for me. I think it's great because you get to hear the excitement from the fans, but it's also, it can be difficult if you've got to break the news and tell them, I'm not coming to your school, because then they just start throwing out haymakers without even knowing what they're talking about. You know, there could be something personal. It could be something with the staff. And I don't know. That's just my opinion on it.
I hear you. Let's get to know you a little bit. How would you describe the type of player and tight end you are, and what the Gators are getting?
Well, I mean, for one, as a tight end, last year I was a bit more of a pass catcher, which, I mean, I think is one of my specialties, but I believe that I'm an all-around tight end. You can put me in at the line, you can put my hand in the dirt. I'll block if I have to. I'll block a DN from Alabama. It doesn't really matter. And then I'll also go out on a cornerback and run a jump ball in the end zone. It doesn't really matter to me. I want to be as involved in the gameplay or game plan as possible. I want to make the biggest impact that I can. And I mean, that's the kind of player that I am. I don't want to be in the spotlight all the time, you know, because that's the job tight ends have. You know, they've got to be blocking and stuff like that. But I want to be able to be the biggest impact player I can be on the field. And I'm also going to outwork every single person that I go up against. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're 50 pounds heavier than I am and I've got to block them, I'm still going to outwork them. And, but yeah, that's about it. I want to be the player that makes the difference, you know, with a little seal off block on the defensive end that breaks out a huge run, or catching a game winning touchdown in the end zone. I just want to be able to make the difference.
Maybe like some Gator tight ends in the past, you get to catch a jump ball from a quarterback.
Exactly.
A little bit of connection here. Mark Brunell is your head coach at Episcopal, and I work with Mark Brunell at News 4 Jax. What's it like playing for him? Him being your head coach, a former NFL quarterback, all the knowledge he can bring to the game of football, and just in general of having, you know, kind of a local celebrity, national celebrity in Jacksonville as your head coach.
Well, I mean, before the whole celebrity thing, what you were saying, that was head on. That's my favorite part about having Coach Brunell as the coach, is he brings so much insight and knowledge of the game. And I mean, for me, you know, it's not for everybody else, and I'm not trying to sound cocky or anything, but for me, it's, you know, he's teaching me how to deal with the media. He's teaching me how to deal with, kind of, not on the level that he was dealing with it, but kind of the fame and everything that I'm going to be getting into. And so he's kind of helping mold me and, you know, take me down the right path. And then also, I mean, he was a quarterback. So obviously we're not running the same positions, but he's trying to show me as much as he can for a tight end. So I can see, you know, two high safeties, you know, that's cover two or cover four, you know, all these reads and everything that a quarterback would do, so that I'm just that much more ahead. And then also, I mean, he brings on great people onto his staff. He had, you know, Tony Baselli was our line coach for a little while. Kevin Hardy is now our one of our defensive coaches. I mean, we've got, in my opinion, the best coaching staff in the state. So, I mean, they really know what they're doing, and they pour all their time during football season into the team. And they do love us as their kids. I mean, they want the best for us. And so I think they're great people. But also, I mean, how you were talking about his fame and how he's a celebrity, that all gets tossed to the side when he comes out on the field to coach for us. It's not – there's no – I'm Mark Brunell. I played for the Jaguars and everything. I led him to the AFC championship game. You know, it's nothing like that. It's – I'm Mark Brunell. I'm your head coach.
Let's go and talk about the Gators for a second. And what about – Dan Mullen's offense kind of piqued your interest, and how do you see yourself? I mean, you kind of talked about kind of the player you are, but how do you see yourself fitting in this Dan Mullen offense? Is it something similar you run in high school? How do you see yourself fitting in, and what do you like about it?
Well, what I like about it the most, Coach Mullen and I sat down and had a lengthy conversation about like what his offensive mind is. And it's pretty much, he looks at the defense that he's going up against that week, and he goes and creates mismatches. So if that means getting me one-on-one with somebody, so the next play they draw over a linebacker and then it makes somebody else wide open, it's kind of everything builds off of each other. And there's not going to be one, you know, key player who keeps getting the ball over and over. It's not going to be like their essential target that they're trying to get the ball to. They're going to be – everybody's going to be getting the ball because of how his offense is running, how he's looking for the mismatches, and he's looking to create the best opportunities each play. And I think it's a different way to look at it. Instead of just running against a defense, you know, he's actually running against like the defense's weaknesses the whole time. I mean, he's not trying to run plays against a certain defense. He's trying to pull the defense out of their comfort zone. And it's something that I find really I think it's a really intelligent idea, but I mean, I'm just a player, he's the coach, so I can't wait to see what he can do.
Being in Jacksonville, of course, it's hard to get away from what Florida's doing on the field. Have you kept up with what Mullen's done these first 2 years under, you know, 2018, 2019, and just the fast success he's been able to bring to the Gators program?
I mean, I have. This past year, obviously, I was paying more attention to Penn State, but I mean, obviously, you know, the year Pitts had is, I mean, you could not see that. But I mean, as a team goes, he's soared. I mean, he's gone with what I thought was going to be a hard team to bring back in the time that he had to where they are now. I think that shows just what kind of coach he is and how good of a coach he is. And then also now that he's getting the recruits that he wants, I think Florida's very close to being in the national championship.
And that leads me to my next question. My co-host Will sent this one in as well. For you, and looking ahead a little bit, what does success look like? Is it going to the NFL, winning a national championship, an SEC championship, becoming an All-American? I'm sure you'd love to accomplish all those things, but what would be labeled as success in your mind?
Well, I mean, obviously, on a personal level, I want to reach the NFL. That's my goal. I'm going to work as hard as I can. Now, reality sets in, and that's very rare for people to go to the NFL. And so I'm going to go, and I'm going to make the best of my opportunity when I get to Florida. I'm going to be the best teammate I can be. I'm going to be the best leader I can be on the field and off the field. I'm going to try and take the team to a national championship, or help take the team to a national championship. You know, I think that's something that would be really huge. I'd like to win a Mackey Award. I think that would be great. But at the end of the day, those are all really, I mean, those are all really hard things to do. So I just want to be the best leader I can be on the team, and I want to be known when I'm done at Florida as, you know, one of the most hardworking people that's come through.
Let's get on the recruiting side a little bit more here. And I'm sure this was brought up in some of the conversation you had with Brewster and Mullen. You're recruited in this class, this 2021 class, with another tight end, Gage Wilcox, you know, labeled as a tight end as well for this class. How do you see yourselves working together? Was that something that was brought up when you were visiting on your junior day?
When I was talking with Coach Brewster and Coach Mullen, it seemed like they wanted me to be more of the Kyle Pitts type tight end, you know, where you're flexed out more, you're running more routes, you're doing more of the passing game. And then I think Gage is going to be more of the blocking guy. I mean, he's still going to go out and catch passes. I'm still going to go and block on the line. I think that's the beautiful thing about Gage and I playing together, is that we're going to be able to complement each other really well, whether he's running routes or I'm running routes, whether he's blocking or I'm blocking. And so, yeah, I think that's what the coaches have said to us so far. But I can't wait. I've known Gage for a little while, and I just can't wait to work with him and push each other. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things that we're going to be doing, is we're going to be pushing each other to be great, and I can't wait.
So speaking of that, of course, Carlos Del Rio, you had the quarterback in a class as well. You have another fellow tight end in Gage Wilcox. You committed kind of early in the process. Do you guys, you know, especially you and your quarterback now that they're coming in this class together, you know, committing early, do you guys get together about going out and trying to recruit other players? And how does that – was it also an added benefit looking at Florida's current commit list that you saw Carlos Del Rio, a quarterback, already committed?
I mean, yeah, it's always that's one of the big things that, you know, the coach harps – you know, when you commit, he's like, you're part of the family now, go out and help your family. You know, you gotta help recruit. And so I enjoy it. You know, I like being able to reach out, tell people, you know, what they're missing out if they're looking to go into another school, showing them why Florida is such a great option, not just on the field, but off the field, and what all it offers. And then obviously, you know, where we are as a football team, I love doing the whole recruiting thing myself, because I think it's fun to get to know people, whether you whether they come to Florida or not, because then you get to make connections all around the NCAA, and I think that's just so cool. But also, yeah, having a quarterback makes it a little bit nicer, because then you get to know your quarterback, and whether you're thrown with them or not, you get to start building that connection.
And then, of course, being in Jacksonville, I'm located in Jacksonville as well, and Florida's recruiting in the area fell down for a little while. So being in Jacksonville, being committed to Florida, talking to Florida, do you see the Gators making more of a push in the area now than compared to in the past, and especially in recent years?
I think that one's tough for me. I don't really know. I feel like they're always pushing hard. You know, good players are going to get recruited by good schools, and I think that's what Florida is. I think losing players from their backyard pretty much is tough always, but I still think that they're recruiting heavily. I just think some kids are being drawn to other schools for reasons out of Florida's control. You know, recruiting might not always be the most fair. You know, there might be added benefits and stuff. I don't know. But Florida, I think they're still recruiting very heavy in the Jacksonville area. And I think there's still a lot of kids that may be committed now to other schools. But I think that they're all looking at Florida, because what's not to like about Florida? You know, they're right there. They're right there getting to, you know, the SEC championship, winning that. They're right there to getting to a national championship. You know, they're about to have these brand new facilities. It's a great school. So I think more and more kids are starting to look at that.
Awesome. A few more questions here with tight end commit Nick Elsness. Nick Will, co-host, sent this question as well and wants to know, let's get to know you a little bit more. There is a student athlete side to this, you know, not just a football player for the Gators. So what's your plans and what's going to be your major when you enroll in classes for Florida?
Well, I'm planning on doing something finance related because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you could branch off and do out of finance. So it's kind of wide open, and then you can pare it down to be as narrow or as wide as you want. So I like that. And I feel like math is my strong suit. So, you know, finance is a lot of math and stuff. So I enjoy that. And I think that's the route that I'm pretty sure I'm going to go.
And any hobbies outside of football? Video games, working out. I know working out's part of it, but
yeah, I mean, working out's part of it. I like fishing. I like hunting. Those are probably my biggest two.
What's your biggest trophy moment in hunting?
Has to be first deer I shot with my bow, for sure. That was probably the most exciting.
Kind of in a different world right now with the way college athletics are going, how do you feel about the whole name and likeness part of the, you know, the debate? Should players be paid? Should they be paid for the likeness? Should you be able to use your image in any way you see fit? Do you keep up with that? And what are your feelings towards it?
I mean, that's another double-edged sword kind of question for me personally. A lot of people look at it and they're just like, oh, you know, but you know, they're getting so much money off of these kids. You know, the schools are, but they're not getting, the kids aren't getting any money. Well, I mean, that's false. Their kids are getting free education. They're getting free housing. You know, they're getting stipends. They're getting all their food free. They're getting all their clothing and like gear free. They're getting, if they've got to go to the doctors, it's free. If, you know, if they're injured and they have to have a surgery, that's free. Everything for players is free. Now, at the same time, you know, if you're starting to sell a kid's jersey and they're not allowed to make any money off of it, I understand that. I understand where players are coming from with that. I wouldn't mind making a couple extra bucks, but at the end of the day, it's not, I mean, it's not like your name's going to be so big that you're going to be making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, you're going to be making just a little bit of extra spend around money. And college athletes already are getting money. Not like illegally. I mean, they're getting stipends, they're getting money in all sorts of forms of stuff. I mean, I don't think that there's a reason for kids to be paid.
All right, and we'll end with this. Of course, everything's different right now. The coronavirus going around. I'm sure the end of your junior season, junior year of high school, has been, you know, upended. Who knows what the future holds with that? So, what are you doing to keep yourself busy, and how are you holding up? You know, these last couple months, last few months of school, no physical form right now. We'll probably end up, you know, finishing the year in some kind of virtual form. But how are you and your family dealing with the coronavirus, and you know, these next few couple months?
Well, I mean, for me, I have two older sisters. One's graduated from college, and she was out doing her her work and job is out up in the North Midwest. I mean, she's in Minnesota area, all sorts of stuff like that, and she had to come all the way home because of the coronavirus, and she's going to be home for the rest of the year. Or until like summer or something. And then my sister, who's a junior at Ole Miss, she's done. She's not going back to college. So I think, I mean, I'll probably end up not going back to school for the rest of the semester. So that's unfortunate because now both my sisters are back in town, and that just creates more havoc around the house, I guess. But I mean, I don't know. It's difficult for every family. And I'll just be interested. I just can't wait until it's all done and over with. You know, I hope everybody stays healthy through this whole time. But I mean, it's difficult for sure. I don't know how I'm going to handle the online school. School in general stuff, and just this whole online stuff is going to be pretty difficult too. But, and then going to the, staying active and everything, we've got a pretty big, driveway. So, you know, I'm having to use bricks and cinder blocks. We've got a couple dumbbells that I'm using, and I'm just finding creative stuff to work out with. You know, I've got, a pickup truck, and so I have a chain in the bed of my pickup truck in case, you know, somebody gets stuck or I need to pull somebody. So I put my truck in neutral and I was pulling my truck around the driveway today. I mean, I didn't really have much else to do.
Yeah, and possibly no spring football either for a lot of the high schools around here.
Oh, I know. And that's probably my least favorite thing because I like, you know, because I'm going to be a captain again this year. I was a captain last year. I want to be able to, you know, start setting that foundation for the team. And, you know, all the returning players are going to want to do that. And we won't have that ability until, who knows, we might not have half of summer conditioning and stuff, depending on how all this goes. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult for sure on all sides. Academics, you know, football, all sports.
Absolutely. Last thought here. Don't know how much you followed Florida. We hit on that briefly before, you know, you committed and everything. But do you have a favorite Gator football moment? And being in Jacksonville, of course, you had to follow Florida probably whether you wanted to or not. And of course, your family history with the Gators. But do you have a favorite Florida Gator football moment?
That's tough, man. There's a lot of great moments. Obviously I remember the, I was in the stand with the Tebow jump pass. I was there for that. That was pretty awesome. but I'll have to say probably my favorite moment was I was at the Auburn Florida game, you know, when, P. Ryan broke that huge touchdown out wide. That was crazy because, you know, he gets open for a couple yards, the crowd starts yelling, then he breaks it out even more, and he's gone, and you couldn't hear yourself think. It was incredible.
Yeah, I had an Auburn buddy with me in the stands. He says the loudest thing he's ever heard. So it was definitely a good memory for Gator Nation. Hey, Nick, man, I can't thank you enough for joining us here on Gators Breakdown, of course. You know, me being from Jacksonville as well, having a local 904 kid on Gators Breakdown speaks a lot to me. I'm happy to do it. But if there's anything out there you want to let Gator Nation know, go right ahead.
Pretty much what I was saying earlier about the kind of football player I am. I'm going to be the hardest working, most motivated kid that y'all will most likely have come through there. And I can't wait to help win a national championship.
All right. And that's Gators tight end commit, Nick Elsness. Nick, thank you much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming and hygiene. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 Essentials Kit. It's the perfect tools for your family jewels. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with a new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof cordless body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. This third generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Nick-free shaving thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. And of course, let's not forget about the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits, right? So why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? When you purchase the new Perfect Package 3.0 kit at manscaped.com, you get the biggest bang for your buck. Subscribers get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer always stays fresh and clean. For a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. This is the perfect package for your perfect package. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code GATORS at manscaped.com. Create your account, get 20% off plus free shipping plus two free gifts with the code GATORS at manscaped.com. And Will, because of the crazy work schedules and the interview done over the weekend, fortunately, you weren't able to join in on the interview, but you did send some questions there. What caught your ear about Nick?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I thought was interesting was his conversation that he had with Mullen, where he was talking about Mullen designing the offense, not necessarily to take advantage of one particular player, but building off of being able to set up mismatches for the offensive player. And I think that's something that we've seen in particular. We've seen that with Kyle Pitts over the last couple of years and last year especially, where he was a mismatch and they went to him when he was one-on-one, but the defense was able to take him away. And then that opened up things for guys like Van Jefferson, Trevon Grimes, and Freddie Swain. So it'll be interesting to see what Mullen can do with Uxness and also what he can do with the tight ends that he's building there with, you know, Pitts still there and obviously Zipper as well.
Yeah, I think you brought it up kind of, and Nick even said when he just sat there and talked with the staff that he may be used more in that Kyle Pitts role with his size given there and his athleticism. So, you know, we'll see. You know, he'll improve himself hopefully this senior year. Hopefully there's a football season there and we get to see him play his senior year of football. But, you know, being used like that, and also in – I did wonder, you know, Tim Brewster comes in, gets two tight end commits in about a month, a little over a month there. And, you know, I definitely wanted to ask him his thoughts on playing and being recruited with another tight end, because it's not often you see two tight ends recruited in the same class. And especially to me from afar, and I know he said maybe him more in the Pitts receiving role and Gage Wilcox in the blocking on the end of the line role. But I kind of see those guys interchangeable in the same role.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a little bit too early to tell where Mullen really wants to use it. Like you said, he's 6'6", so he's not a small guy. And so that has been one of the hallmarks of Mullen thus far in his tenure at Florida, is he's had a lot of really big guys on the outside at wide receiver, and he's brought in big guys at tight end as well. And when you look at a guy like Keon Zipper, he's a little bit smaller than Elksness is. So, you know, it does give you that little sort of the variation that maybe you're looking for. But, you know, I think the biggest thing I maybe take from it is that, you know, it's a kid from Jacksonville who wants to be a Gator, who wants to stay close to home, who recognizes the benefit of both the academic and the athletic education that he's going to get at Florida, and then can act as a recruiting as an extension of the recruiting staff, and is willing to do that. So, you know, I think it's a good pickup, obviously. And, you know, I think it's an indication maybe that Brewster is the recruiter we've been looking for, that he can get two guys at the same position at his position to recruit and convince them they're going to have enough playing time and that they're going to develop.
All right. Yeah. So really good conversation there with Nick. Thank him a lot for hopping on here on Gators Breakdown. So with him, let's take a look at this Gators recruiting class and kind of where it stands going into April right now. The Gators ranked third in the 24/7 sports composite and second in Rivals with 14 commits. A few trends here, Will. Eight of these commits rank in the top 300, with five of those basically in the top 200. Eight of the commits are from the state of Florida, four from the state of Georgia. Eight of the 14 are on the offensive side of the ball. And this comes after, you know, a defensive heavy class last cycle. Got the quarterback in the class with Carlos Del Rio, an all-purpose back here with Breshard Smith, two four-star wide receivers in Trevante Rucker, Dejon Reynolds, as we just mentioned, two tight ends, Gage Wilcox and Nick Elsness. Early on with these 14, an emphasis on offense so far. When also, you know, look, 14 commits, that's a lot for the Gators right now. If you look at the top five teams, top five programs on 24/7 Sports, Ohio State also has 14 commits, Clemson with 10 commits, Florida third, 14 commits. North Carolina, they ranked fourth with 11 commits. And Miami, 10 commits. You know, they round up the top five. Those are the only programs right now that have double-digit commits. Florida, you know, if you're chasing and you want to compare to Ohio State and Clemson right now, Florida's average is at 90.62. The average for Ohio State and Clemson, Ohio State 95.09 and Clemson at 95.59. So, of course, you know, 14 commits for Florida, 14 for Ohio State. The top end a little bit higher for Ohio State. The bottom end a little bit higher for Ohio State. That's probably the biggest difference is their bottom end doesn't fall as deep as Florida's. Their floor is higher than Florida's right now. So, Will, great start, 14 commits. You know, everything will change. The more commits, it's going to be hard for this programs to stay around that 95 range. That's kind of that's the top end of recruiting here. But if programs that are like Ohio State and Clemson, those are the programs that can do it. I think Florida's average will rise a bit as we get closer to National Signing Day, if recruiting kind of goes the way we think it will for the Gators in the coming months, all the way up to December in February. But there's a few trends here to like about this class, Will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the 14 commits is a big deal because when you look at the last couple of years, Florida coming into really June, July, August has been relatively barren in terms of the number of commits that they've had. And then also that those commits, especially 2 years ago, were, I think their class average was somewhere around 87 points. So to have it at 90.6 coming out of March, I think is pretty significant. The other thing is that, you know, when you're a team on the rise like Florida that maybe hasn't recruited the way that teams have historically at Florida, one of the things that you do is you take on a bunch of guys, and some of those guys who are maybe borderline takes might get pushed out of the class if, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 star guys decide to commit to Florida, especially if you have a good season this year. So I think there's some opportunity for guys who are going to decide to go elsewhere because they feel like they'll get more playing time. And, you know, Florida's not going to stop recruiting guys at some of the high level positions, and, you know, a defensive tackle who's a 3-star may decide to go someplace else if they bring in a 5-star guy. So, you know, things are always fluid in March. I think things get much more solid when you get towards August. That's when you really want to be looking at these rankings for two reasons. One is that you've got a much better idea of what your class is going to look like, but it's also because you have a much better idea of what your opponent's class is going to look like. And so you understand how to compare. And certainly you look at Ohio State and Clemson and say, hey, they've jumped out significantly to the front. They're probably going to be hard to catch because, to be honest, Ohio State's ranking right now is right around where Florida finished last year. So, you know, it's going to be a tall task to catch them, but teams like Georgia, teams like LSU, those are teams, you know, Georgia only has 4 commits. Tennessee has 7. LSU has 4. So there's still an opportunity to close the gap between those teams and Florida, and that's what Mullen's going to have to do.
One spot, Will, that caught my eye, I really like because what Florida was able to do last cycle is in the defensive trenches and getting another top-end defensive lineman in Tyreek Sapp. You know, after getting Jervon Dexter, Johnny Brown, Princely Umemilan, Jalen Lee, Lamar Goods, you know, all ranked as top 361 players last cycle, they follow that up by getting a commitment with a top 100 player in Tyreek Sapp. So, look, there was a great start right there in the defensive trenches, but this defensive line can grow into something special this class as well. 5-star defensive tackle Leonard Taylor, who brought his family along on his junior day visit earlier in March. Florida's battling Miami there right now. Florida's in good shape there for Taylor. Speaking of Miami, they have a 4-star commit that Florida's heavily targeting as well from Miami Palmetto. Defensive tackle Savion Collins has visited Florida and mentions how much he likes Florida. But early on, his mom prefers him to stay close to home with the hometown Hurricane. So Gators are in great shape if he was to flip anywhere else. And I know he's kind of been on his mom about, you know, taking Florida more serious here. So we'll see where that ends up going. The line of communication is there. 4-star defensive lineman Bryce Langston, a former Gators commit, just announced a top 2 of Florida and LSU over this weekend. 4-star Tumis Adeliye from IMG is another highly rated 4-star, almost 5-star, that the Gators are in great shape for. He's visited twice, has a great relationship with the Gators staff, in particular David Turner. Look out for Ohio State in that one as well. You know, look, Will, there's a chance right there to get more elites on the defensive line, you know, have it built right behind that impressive haul from last cycle. That's how you build championship rosters. All of those targets rank in the top 300, and the Gators are in great shape in an area on the field that makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago, I think I looked at top five offenses and top five defenses and what the recruiting classes had been, both on the offensive line at the skill positions and then on the defensive line and the skill positions, sort of the linebackers and the safeties and the corners. And what you found is that the offensive line recruiting didn't matter all that much to success, but the defensive line recruiting mattered an awful lot. And you end up with teams like Michigan and Ohio State and Alabama and Clemson up there in the top five all the time because they have the athletes on defense who can really make a difference. I think on the offensive side, that's a little bit less important. So last year's class for Mullen was heavily tilted towards the defense. I think that was probably the right thing to do because if you believe, like I do, that he's a skilled head coach and can get the most out of his team, you figure he's going to be able to get the points and he just needs the athletes on the defensive side of the ball. This class seems to be a little bit more balanced, but when you know, a lot of those prospects that you're listing off are guys who are defensive linemen and defensive stalwarts that they're going to try to bring in. And you never say no to a five-star guy, obviously, but you want, if you told me you need a five-star offensive line or a five-star defensive line, you can only have one, I'd tell you, you want to take the defensive guy.
All right. So kind of mentioned earlier too, as well, you know, discussed that Florida already has two wide receivers committed and in great shape to get one more with four-star Marcus Burke out of Trinity Christian here in Jacksonville. Gators put themselves in great shape here after Junior Day. He was looking to get on campus once more for the start of spring practice. His interest is very high in the Gators, but he also just announced a top five of Miami, Georgia Tech, Penn State, Georgia, and the Gators. And we'll kind of going back to a point that I brought up to Nick earlier in the conversation. Look, I mean, Marcus Burke, highly rated four-star wide receiver out of Jacksonville. And we've mentioned time and time again of getting back in the Gator-friendly areas under Dan Mullen. You've got Nick Elksness there, the tight end commit from Jacksonville. And now we got Travis Johnson from Barton Trail last cycle in the Jacksonville area as well. And now Marcus Burke at Trinity Christian, highly rated wide receiver in the Jacksonville area. I mean, it's time to get back in that Gator-friendly area and get the top end guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody who lives in Jacksonville, I don't want to come to Gainesville, right? It's a short ride. Your friends are all going to get to come see you. I'm not sure why you'd go out to Tallahassee or go down to Coral Gables if you had the opportunity to go to Gainesville if Florida's good. And so, yeah, we've been talking for a couple of years now that Florida needs to be able to draw essentially a circle around a radius around Gainesville and then build out from there. And Jacksonville is really the first major city you run into when you do that. So it's a great sign to see those guys come in there. But, you mentioned just about everybody that they've got as commits in this class is either from Florida or from Georgia. And so again, the idea of that circle, they're not going out to California to get somebody. They're not going up to the DC metro area to bring somebody in. Certainly you'll go out to those locations if there's a special guy who wants to be a Gator, but 90%, 95% of the class needs to be Georgia and Florida. And it looks like that's what they're doing this class.
I mean, look, those two states right there to me are definitely top four in the country when it comes to talent. Like, I think Florida leads the way. Then you go, Texas, California, but Georgia more than likely is that fourth state behind those three states of producing top end tough guys there in the recruiting world. And Georgia's really the state of Georgia's really shot up there in recent years. Part of it's because they pay their head coaches really well. Channel 4 WJXC where I work at, we did a story on why some of these Florida coaches Florida head coaches who don't get paid as much why they're leaving to go to the state of Georgia, and it's a lot of control, and they get paid a good bit. So they're getting a lot of good coaches who develop good talent in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, certainly high school football in the South obviously is big business, and it's been that way in Florida for a while, but Georgia's just right behind, and especially when you talk about Southern Georgia, where it's almost Florida, there's quite a bit of talent in that region, and Florida's going to have to be able to exploit it, especially because they have to fight with Florida State and Miami within the state, and then now you've got Clemson and Alabama and Georgia coming down into the state to try to poach guys as well, so being able to go back into that region and poach some people away from Kirby Smart is an important thing for Mullen to be able to make sure that he's on equal footing. So it's good to see, but certainly, guys like Trevante Rucker who are from Ocala, like that's not a guy you can lose. You have to, like, if you've got a highly skilled wide receiver, so he's 154th nationally and he's in Ocala, I mean, he's right in your backyard. You have to bring that guy in, and they're starting to do that.
All right, so a couple quick names here before we wrap up recruiting: four-star safety Amari Harvey. Gators seemed to be the outright front runner recently, but he is out from, you know, West Florida, close to Tallahassee. He's got family in his ear. I think I'm trying to maybe push him to the FSU side of things. He visited Florida State not long ago, and a lot of people are kind of now torn on Florida State there for Harvey. There, he's even got a crystal ball on the 24/7 site after his FSU visit log for the Seminoles. So we'll see where that one goes. I think that's going to be a battle between Florida State in the end. Five-star cornerback Jason Marshall, he had a junior day visit as well, brought his family. Gators trending well here lately as he's visited Florida more than anywhere else. And, you know, that has to help with the way recruiting is going right now with the coronavirus going around. So all those guys on the junior day visit, bringing their families in and visiting Florida a lot, you have to kind of like where that one's leaning. And then four-star safety Corey Collier. One Florida needs to get Will, and he's a target. And a highly rated target, and even more so, you know, after the Gators missed out on Devontae Williams last cycle, they need some talented depth there at that safety position. So this sets up well for Florida. He's out of that Miami Palmetto group, and the Gators are battling Clemson early here.
Yeah, I think there are two places where you kind of figure Florida needs to hit pretty big in this cycle. One's at safety, and then the other's at running back. And you know, they've been able to bring in some transfers to fill some holes at running back. Obviously, before that, they were bringing in transfers to fill holes at wide receiver and defensive end. But, you know, you're not going to be able to do that forever. And so, you know, they really haven't brought in they didn't bring in a high-level running back this past cycle. And two cycles ago, they only brought in one. And so they're going to have to address that at some point. And like you said, missing out on Williams, I think everybody sort of thought he was in the bag. And I do wonder whether it'll be interesting to see how aggressively they go after multiple safeties this cycle to make sure that they get one, because you know, they do need to fill that gap.
All right. Before we wrap up here, let's hit on your site at readandreaction.com. And where you released an article over the weekend on Sunday, I believe it was, and you know, you hit on why, you know, Florida may not miss last year's group of senior wide receivers as much as we think. Not to take away anything from those guys, but Florida had a large group of contributors at wide receiver, and we're looking at guys at Trevon Grimes, Kadarius Toney, throw Kyle Pitts in there as well, you know, to make up for what Florida lost last year.
Yeah, it was interesting. I sort of looked back at what LSU had done a little bit, and then Georgia over the last couple of years as well. I mean, you know, no one's gonna replicate what Jamar Chase did, where he had 28 explosive plays on 122 targets. But you know, Florida's offense last year was reasonably explosive. It wasn't like crazy explosive, and I think a lot of people have attributed that to Kyle Trask. But you know, I look back at 2018, and you didn't really see a huge difference between Trask and Franks. And so, you know, the question is, are the guys coming up? So Toney, Pitts, Copeland, and Grimes more explosive than Jefferson, Hammond, Swain, and Cleveland? I think there's a reason to believe they might be. And so, you know, I'm not saying that they're going to be able to replace those guys' leadership. I'm not saying that they're going to be able to replace those guys' consistency. But you can envision a scenario where if Kadarius Toney can stay healthy, he can be more explosive than Josh Hammond, right? So it's just a very different situation than Georgia, who, because of the suspension for J.J. Holloway and the dismissal of J.J. Holloway, wound up having to replace everybody, right? So they went from Hardman, Ridley, Holloway, and Godwin being their top four receivers to Pickens, Cager, Robertson, and Simmons. And Pickens and Cager actually did a pretty good job in terms of generating explosive plays. The issue was that Robertson and Simmons did not. So when they had to replace all four guys, two of the four guys just weren't really capable of pulling their weight when it came to being explosive. Whereas Florida, I think, has people sort of waiting in the wings to be able to do that, who've already proven the ability to do that, which means you only need a guy, you know, one guy to step up. So if Xavier Henderson comes in and he plays really, really well, if Jamarcus Weston plays really, really well, then you've got that one guy you need to sort of step in, instead of having to rely on all four guys sort of stepping in brand new and being outstanding. So I think Florida's in a decent situation with their wide receiver stepping in. And you know, I went and looked at different stats that looked at both explosive plays, but also target depths. So I'm going to be writing in the next week or so about Trask versus Franks and sort of what to expect in 2020 because of what we can see from how Mullen called plays in those in those 2 years.
All right. Well, the stat I'm going to leave everybody with so they can go read the article is, you know, Freddie Swain, Josh Hammond, Tyree Cleveland, Van Jefferson. Those are the four wide receivers we're mostly talking about here. And the stat that you put in the article, you know, those four accounted for 44% of the Gators' receptions, 48% of their receiving yards, 49% of the receiving touchdowns there. You know, that's not throwing LaMichael Perine in that as well. But, Will, you know, what that does tell me is, you know, there's about a 50-50 split, or, you know, close to a 50-50 split of the guys that are leaving and the guys that are returning.
Yeah, well, I mean, even if you look at explosive plays, so Jefferson, Hammond, Swain, and Cleveland accounted for 27 explosive plays on 193 targets. Tony, Pitts, Copeland, and Grimes had 24 explosive plays on 173 targets. So you mentioned 50-50. They were basically targeted equivalently and produced pretty close to equivalently as well. So I think it's a good sign going into 2020 that those guys have the ability to perform like the seniors. Obviously, the depth maybe is a little bit of a concern. An injury or two could really change things. But that's sort of the case at one position grouping or another every year going in. There are very few teams that are loaded enough to where, you know, if they get two or three injuries in one particular place where they can survive it. I think Florida's sort of the same play in the same place at wide receiver.
All right. So everybody can go read that at readandreaction.com. Get feeling good about the Florida Gator receiving core and what we can look forward to in this 2020 season. Will, man, anything else?
Nah, man, just appreciate everybody listening to us. And hopefully we're giving everybody a little bit of a respite or at least giving them some content while they're sitting at home, not able to go to work or working from home. And I mean, you know, working from home in quotes is usually the way that works. So certainly reach out to us. We'd love to hear what you want to. You know, I'd love to hear what people would like us to take a look at. You know, it's a little bit of a downtime with nothing happening on a daily basis. Usually there's all sorts of stuff going on in Gator Nation, but right now there can't be because of the situation. So certainly if people have any ideas, send them our way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There to kind of follow up with Will there. We've kind of been discussing behind the scenes. I think one thing I want to do, Will, is what, you know, we can take a look back at the 96, 2006, 2008 seasons. Kind of get our initial, you know, our go back and look at those seasons and important games and maybe our favorite memories from that season as we kind of adventure through those seasons together, and maybe even go and kind of do maybe some kind of watch party or a watch of, you know, important games throughout Gator history that we like so much and can go back and, like, I remember going back and kind of listening to I don't watch pro wrestling anymore, but I've went back and listened to the podcast of when I did watch wrestling of the 90s, and they'll go back and they'll watch an old WCW Nitro on a Monday night, and then they'll give kind of their behind the scenes look and their thoughts of what was happening in that episode. So maybe that's something we can do for, you know, our Peyton Manning never beating Florida, or our the 2002 Georgia game, and, you know, Florida had no business winning that game, but ended up winning that game. And some of our, you know, just some of our favorite games and some of the big games throughout Gator history, we can kind of go back and review a bit.
Yeah, man, sounds good. I mean, I think that's one of the things all of us are sort of looking for. Sports is a nice respite from life in general, and that's been taken away for a little while. So I'm looking forward to it. It's been a while since I've checked out some of those games. And, you know, there's always – you always remember the big plays that happen in those games, but there's always sort of the hidden play that leads to the big play or the thing that you didn't remember that, oh, yeah, that was really a key. And that's always sort of fun to go back and rediscover.
All right, that's Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at Will Miles, SEC, and on his site, readandreaction.com. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.